and welcome to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Han, and we know that not everyone likes to relax by hearing about politics at the end of the day. But the UK's decision to leave the EU is something that we've all got to get our heads around, so that's why we started the podcast. It's an opportunity for me as much as you to try and find out what Brexit really means. So this week's guest is South London comedian and Leave voter Jeff Norcott. Tim caught up with him while he was performing his show Conservative at The Fringe. They talk a bit about his background and why he decided to talk about politics in his comedy, as well as the reaction he's gotten to his controversial show. No matter what side of the debate you stand on, Jeff's arguments are interesting to say the least, so definitely stay tuned. If you enjoy this podcast, we would really, really appreciate it if you could rate and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. It really helps us out. If you want to leave us suggestions for future guests, or you just want to stay updated, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
For our next guest, Steve Jacktis Jobbin is an English teacher. He spent 15 years on the road as a comedian. And if comics traditionally emerge from left field, Jeff is rampaging from the right. He's currently performing in Edinburgh with his new show, Conservative, and a headline in The Independent asks, what's it like to be the only pro-Tory, pro-Brexit, right-wing comedian doing The Fringe? Jeff, I imagine it's terrifying.
It has been a bit. I mean, now I'm getting towards the end of the run and people have come and we've had sold-out shows. I'm a bit more relaxed. But the drive up the A1 here was a long question of what exactly am I doing? I mean, there was no evidence as to whether or not this show or this style of comedy could find an audience. But, you know, pretty much from the start, it seemed to. And, I'm more relaxed now than I was at the beginning. I mean, there have been some hairy moments along the way. Not everybody has taken kindly to my politics. But broadly, the audiences have been brilliant, left or right. They've been fantastic.
So are you a South London boy, is that correct?
Yes, South London boy. As I say in the show, I was brought up on a council estate in Wimbledon, which immediately loses me any working class credibility. For some reason, things I've been at Wimbledon seem to presume it's all strawberries and cream. But obviously, and particularly in the late 80s, there's a bit down towards kind of Earlsfield and Wandsworth that wasn't so nice. But South London, then the family moved to Mitcham as well, which is, I think, properly rough and still is, God bless it.
Sure, you were more Wimbledon dog track and plough lane as opposed to SW19.
Yeah, the football club when it was there. Yeah, that was my neck of the woods. We were down towards Burnsford Road. But I mean, it's a sort of schizophrenic place to grow up, really. And I think that growing up poor, you're better off doing it in a town where everybody's poor because then you don't have the contrast. But in Wimbledon, not only are you aware of these people in the village that is some of the priciest real estate in the world, then once a summer, you get even more rich people arrive for the tennis as well. It can be quite galling.
let's talk a little bit about the show then. What gave you the idea to do this?
Well, I did my toe in the water of politics a couple of times in 2013. Because I was sitting there with my wife and I was thinking, you know, what's the one thing? I wanted to have this one thing in comedy that I could talk about that was quite at very least rare. And my wife said to me, well, you focused earlier, that's a bit weird. I was like, yeah, I've never really thought about it in that way. And this was kind of pre all this debate about where are the right-wing voices in comedy. So I just did it at the Leicester Festival. The show got nominated for Best New Show. And I thought, well, you know, it's interesting. And then in 2015, I sort of expanded on it a bit. But then this year, I thought, you know what the really interesting thing is, or potentially funny thing is how the hell somebody like me ends up voting for this mob? Because I'm not like them. You know, I have two disabled parents. I grew up on a council estate. It's odd in itself. So the story is, I mean, there is some sort of large P political stuff in it, but a lot of it is personal and anecdotal.
Yeah, sure. I guess the question then is, you know, how do you come to end up voting for this mob, as you call them? Where do your political stance come from?
Well, I think it's the filter through which you view life events. I mean, like, the Tories did pretty well with working class voters with a crackdown on benefit culture and benefit fraud. But I think that took people by surprise. But people like me are exactly the people that see firsthand, you know, what benefit fraud looks like. And also what state dependency can do to people. And I saw plenty of people, you know, from my own mum to close friends, where there was a period where work didn't pay. And so when the language of making work pay really speaks to me, because I saw people with high capabilities just stuck in a cycle. So, you know, and I think more and more we've got to sort of accept that you can grow up in that environment and feel the same. Because, I mean, Ruth Davidson also, you know, grew up on a council estate and she's ended up thinking this way. And I think there are more people who feel like this than is given credit for.
Yeah, no, makes sense. So you take your show up to Edinburgh. How many shows have you done now? Has it been a still sort of steady growth over the piece?
Well, what happened was from the first full night of the run, Saturday, it sold out. And I'll be honest, the room isn't massive because, like all good stories, I cut my cloth accordingly. I'm not like these socialists that get in debt and, you know, rooms that they can't fill. It's a smallish room, but it started selling out. And I think it sold out most nights, all bar one. And then literally tonight's show, there's an extra show as well because the early show sold out. And, you know, people said nice things early on. And it's interesting. I mean, I people seem to presume that the audience is broadly kind of Tories. And there are, don't get me wrong, there are a lot of people in the 50-plus category that are predisposed to my views. But it wouldn't have worked if I didn't have lots of liberal left types coming along to hear me out and have their own views challenged. And, you know, those people, I'm so grateful that they've come because I think that's true open-mindedness, really.
Yeah, on these liberal left views, I imagine a heckling probably plays a little bit of a part. And I did see that you have a heckling amnesty introduced into your show at some point.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a bit early in the show where I make a point about Maggie Thatcher. And I noticed in the previews that it got a sort of sharp gasp of inhaled air. I think it wasn't like a completely radical point. It was just that I wasn't saying she was evil.
So that's pretty radical, Jeff.
That is up here, mate. That is on the far end. So I thought, and at that point, I just thought, well, let's have something formal where I can sort of say, look, just keep count of all the grievances you have with me, all the things that I've thought that you know you're calling out mentally, and then 2/3 of the way through the show, you know, you can have a bite back. And there have been some nights, you know, I don't know, maybe they're just all Tories, but some nights people. Sometimes just personal insults, to be honest. But there's been some good debates. Literally last night, there was a woman who was particularly aggrieved about the Tory obsession with, you know, with faith schools and free schools. And there was a gentleman to the left of her who was an RE teacher in a faith school. And we had a quite funny debate. And then it occurred to me, having been a teacher and worked in a faith school, that one of the benefits is that to have a higher power than the head teacher. So if they don't respect the head teacher, you can then refer them on to God. I could kind of see it both sides. But it's been really interesting. I mean, some nights it's dominated by more left-leaning people. And then there was one night where I got the sense that possibly I was the most left-wing person in the room. And that was weird.
Yes.
I felt that I wasn't going far enough for them. But it's been occasionally testy. I've had a couple of people walk out. But you know, I can't grumble, right? I'm sort of provoking people, and I'm aware I'm at a Scottish liberal arts festival doing this show. I can't really claim that I never expected that.
Yeah. Have you noticed? Obviously, with Brexit coming, it's kind of, I suppose, polarised views in some respects. Have you noticed a change in the public generally since June the 23rd?
Well, I think that there was a first phase of the reaction. I'm sorry. I'm with the place I'm at. Has a landline phone which has just rung.
It hasn't rung. Not a problem.
It hasn't rung the whole time on it, and it's also this weird old fashioned phone as well. So that literally scared the shit out of me. It seemed like something in a horror film. You know the ones where you have to dial round.
Yes. I like the idea that you put up with a fortnight's worth of left wing heckling and a phone in your flat scares the shit out of you on a Saturday morning.
It was something a bit William Burroughs about it. I don't know what happened there. Initially after Brexit, there was that slightly hysterical reaction on the Romanian side. I mean, I'm saying hysterical, they obviously see it as reasonable, but it did seem the way that people that voted Leave was being characterised was quite binary. But somehow, I mean, obviously, initially it was if you voted Leave, you were racist. Then the next day, or maybe you're just xenophobic. Third day, you're just thick, and you start thinking, "Well, thick, I'm not the one who went on a march after the vote." You know, like there, I think what's been interesting to me is that I think some people have expected me, because I voted Leave, to sort of formulate some master argument for it. But then my view is that left-wing comics at the fringe have for years been able to just kind of poke fun at hypocrisy and hysteria on the right. And I think, well, I get to do that as well. I'm not up here. I've never seen a left-wing comic form a hilarious defence of Clause 4, right? So equally, I see my job as to kind of puncture some of the more inflated views on the liberal left, and in a playful way. But I certainly think I think debate is possible now. Whereas I think for 2 weeks I was very hesitant about getting involved.
Yeah, have you considered doing a face-off with a left-wing comic and sort of Eminem style rap attack at one another or something?
I did do that a few years ago. If people Google comedians rap battle, Jeff Norcott, Ben Norris. We had a rap battle, but we were so gentlemanly about it. I think it fell outside of the because we knew each other. So we went to town on issues of politics and religion, but we were sort of looking at each other going, oh, you're all right, mate, you're all right. I would be. I mean, and this is one thing I really do want to say, actually, is that I've had a couple of press interviews where people have sort of suggested or have other comics made you a pariah, or is it testy? And I have to say that comedians have been brilliant in terms of helping me out with jokes for this show here and there, helping me promote the show. And the great thing about stand-ups is that because they're creative, they prefer ideas over ideology. So yeah. within my colleagues, it's been great. As to whether the sort of TV and radio side of the industry believe it's something they can pick up and run with, I guess we'll see after the festival.
Yeah. Also, perhaps the idea that somebody's got a great joke, but they feel they can't say it themselves. So, well, Jeff,
do you know what? Jeff
Hunt is the guy to do it.
I have that. I think of a joke and I think, well, I can't say that. I couldn't make that funny. But it's almost like a baby that you need to give a home to. You go, look, please say this. There was another comic that had a routine about frozen food the other day. And I had a memory of how my mum used to always defrost everything in one go, and then if you cook it all in one go as well. And I just said, this meeting, please use this observation because I've got nowhere to put it. But I just wanted to go to a good home. And I think in terms of politics, I think, you know, no matter how left-wing people are, we all cut across the other divide from time to time. It'd be weird if you didn't think things that contradicted your own core political identity. So yeah, my colleagues have been brilliant. I guess the leap in terms of being a right-wing comic is a fear-based one because, they might just say, well, we don't think you're the right guy, Jeff. But I think, well, if not me, then somebody, because what you currently have is television and radio and comedy, where massive swathes of the population never, ever hear a view politically that chimes with their own, and it must seem odd to them. And there's not a huge amount of us around, but I do think it's getting to a point where those people deserve to hear something that reflects their views.
Hmm. So without going fully into your master plan, why did you vote for Brexit?
Why did I vote for Brexit? Well, it was, I can go into the sort of political side of it, and that was to do with taking responsibility. And one of the points of the show is that I think a lot of your political acts are actually born out of hunches about human nature. So you can dress it up in theory, you can read articles, but the actual simple language of taking a more direct role in forming policy and shaping the country's destiny, that spoke to me. I never heard something about the EU that I liked particularly. That was the problem. Every time I researched the EU Commission, it just seemed to throw up more things that wound me up. You know, the fact that they're all earning £250,000. Like every single person on the EU Commission was earning more than the British Prime Minister. I found out that there'd never been an ethnic minority EU Commissioner. And a lot of people said to me, well, that's because a lot of European countries don't have the same sort of percentage representation of ethnic minorities. And think, well, but then that still means that they're representing us. And our country is a bit more diverse in that respect. So I struggled to find things. And I'm not going to say that I'm the most well-read guy. I am, I'm not a populist is a weird word, but I'm, a working class bloke. I've read a few papers sometimes. And I never felt inspired by staying in the EU. Maybe that was a failure of the Remain camp.
Is there anything that you were uneasy with, though, about voting to leave? Was there one thing that you jumped at? For that potential should remain.
Well, prior to, I was aware that the short-term economic effects would potentially be negative. And, when all the markets crashed and everything, and everyone said, well, look, this is it. Thank you very much, Leader. Look what you did. I think, well, I kind of expected that. Like, you sort of built that in. It was always about a medium to long-term future. So that didn't trouble me particularly. Voting for people alongside people like Boris Johnson and Michael Gove, who, you know, are not necessarily guys I'd sit in a pub with. There was that thing about, oh, you shared a platform with, and you know, and you shared a platform with racists. And I think, you know, I've stood on a lot of train platforms. I don't really want to be held accountable that we were all going to Gingrich. You know, I got off at a different stop. Yeah. I felt that was a bit. I think the people just wanted you to feel bad, I guess, and that was a rock that they could throw. However, I will say this is that, you know, when the hate crime spiked. I mean, obviously it's calmed down a bit now. I was naive. I didn't think that would happen, and the scale of it and the sort of brief intensity of it took me by surprise, and I did start to wonder. You know, but it seems like things have calmed down now, and. Hopefully that will be, you know, just a brief period of time in British history.
Yeah. Do you think we're actually going to leave?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do. I think that... this is the thing, 62% of people voted leave. I've got a hunch that of the 48% that didn't, over time, I think a lot of people are up for this. So they just think, all right, let's see how it is. Let's get on with it. Let's do it. So what that then creates is potentially two-thirds of the country that are disposed to the idea, which I think has moved from where it was in the immediate weeks after. So I think that there is, I think where it could, I think Theresa May is right to push it on. Initially, my hunch was that we should, you know, take our time, get the negotiation right. I just feel like, and even in the city as well, they're making noises, there's an appetite to just find out what is this going to be. Let's start the next chapter of this country's history and let's make it work.
Yeah, the sense that, uncertainty is the worst thing that can happen to the market.
People like positivity. People like a lot of people, even my friends who voted Remain, who are worried. Like they're like, you know, people were saying, "How's it going to work?" They, optimism. People underestimate optimism as a political message. And if you get out there and just say, "Look, this is how it could work." Okay, and we believe it will work. People want to feel reassured, don't they? All the time, people just want to feel, "Is it going to be okay? Well, am I going to be okay?" Just tell them, "Yeah, it's going to be fine," because so much of it comes from consumer confidence as well. You know, there are structural elements to pulling out that could cause economic problems, but you can keep consumer confidence high, then it could temper some of the effects.
Yeah, so what do you make of David Davis as the man to lead all this through then?
Do you know what I think about Theresa May? I think she's so smart that what she did was she gave the Brexiteers, they wanted their kill, essentially, because they won. So in her first cabinet, she thought, right, well, there'll never be a better time to give those guys their head. So she's put these three people that are obviously not going to get along in the long run in close proximity. And, you know, at least one of them is going to get torn apart by the other two. And then I think in successive cabinet reshuffles, I think in a couple of years' time, we'll see the sort of cabinet that Theresa May really wants. Of the three of them, Hammond, Johnson and David Davis, I think he's the most likely to go first, I would say. He's a bit too much of a boisterous leader. I quite like the idea that Theresa May kind of hedged. I think that's a good position to be in for the negotiations. And seeming to be anti-Europe for the negotiations, I don't think will do anybody any favours.
Yes, yeah. You have to throw out a bit of an olive branch somewhere along the line.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, look, I noted...
Well, maybe not Bob Geldof. Yeah. I mean, in terms of olive branch. You know, he's got sort of what a lead, but... But yeah, not Bob Geldof or Eddie Izzard, nice guys though they are. I think, to be honest, I quite like Theresa May today. I think she's positioned. Her and Merkel seem to get on. just go, you know, have a week.
Yeah,
away
that's
together.
A good thing or a frightening concept.
I just trust them both as politicians. I think that they're reasonable people, and I think that the other, you know, certainly in terms of Johnson and Davis, I think that there's some unresolved public school issues at work there. So I want somebody with a clearer eye on it, maybe.
Look, just on to more important matters. I noticed your latest tweet. You're demanding the right for a cooked breakfast on a Saturday morning. So
yeah, I think, you know, having been political for some time, I think it's also we've got to get into the small p politics. And every Saturday I just get up. I think the saddest thing. Have you ever eaten cereal on a Saturday morning? It's the worst sensation. I just feel like we don't commit to much as a country, do we? We're quite centrist. But if we just said cook breakfast for everybody, and you just have this voucher, and it's an entitlement that by 11 a.m. you must fulfill. It's just a brilliant way to start your weekend, and I will be having Eggs Benedict, which, as a working class lad, every time I order Eggs Benedict, I feel like I've thrown off the shackles of the class system. I really do.
Let yourself down. We did. You'll probably appreciate this. I did have the discussion with a friend yesterday, bemoaning the loss of greasy spoons on every other corner in London, where it's all now a chain coffee shop.
Yeah, they're hard to find. I mean, I'm staying in Leith because, I mean, all these liberal arts performers, right, they love the working classes, but they all stay in the Meadows, of course. Whereas I, the right winger, I'm down here in a truly working class area. And what's happened with Leith Walk is from the top, it started to be gentrified all the way down. And even halfway down Leith Walk now, you've got a place called Serrano and Manchego, where you can go for huevas and coffee. And don't get me wrong, it's a lovely place, but I've noticed over the years that now I have to go right to the bottom of Leith Walk, and there's a place called Leith Walk Cafe, and that is, you'd enjoy that. It's simple. The only thing it's missing is obviously the misty fog of roll-up smoke, which probably you would associate, awful though it was part of the deal. But yeah, it is dying out.
Brilliant. The white van laminated menus with a few typos in, a thing of beauty.
It still has all of that. And that's what weird bacon that you know is not good bacon, but is also the best bacon.
Yes, carcinogenic, but wonderfully appetizing.
Yeah, just loads of water injected into it, but it looks like the business.
Outstanding. Okay, terrific. Any other rights we should be claiming back then as we make our hasty way out of the EU?
Well, I mean, there's not, you know, in terms of a British identity, I think it'll be interesting. I mean, so it's like, what I do think, and this is one thing I meant to say earlier, and sorry for going back to it, but, you know, just being a leaver, this country's got a very proud history of integrating numerous cultures, and I think that that will continue. I think that is a part of who we are. I just quite like the idea that it's by our own volition that is happening, if you know what I mean. So I'm kind of backtracking in what we were saying here a little bit. But listen, what was it? You know, a few years ago, the country's top dish was tikka masala. I don't think anything's set to change in that. This is the point. We can't afford to shut out global cuisine. I mean, nobody has a racist stomach. I've never met anybody whose stomach was prejudiced. So let's keep hold of that as we move forward into a new future.
Good point. If we listen to our stomachs, we probably wouldn't go far wrong. So I think we're nearly through. Thank you, Jeff. Just on the Scots in general, what's their view now? Do they want to? Are they striking out for independence once more? What's the feeling in Edinburgh?
So odd that how events have gone, and it's kind of unfair as well. But there is arguably a sort of more uncertain view of independence given what's happened. Because it's kind of, people are unsettled, right? And it's quite, you could draw a sort of strict line, say, well, Britain has left, we want to stay in the EU, we're going to leave, we're going to join the EU. But when you've already had the rug pulled from under you, the idea of doing it again in quick succession must be slightly more alarming. Mm-hmm. And as well, you know, with the Leave vote, you know, there's roughly a third of people up here that voted Leave, and I think that, you know, it's the same with London, wasn't it? So, well, London voted Remain, 60-40, right? If you're in a room of 100 people, that wouldn't seem like a massive difference. So to underestimate the fact that there were people in Scotland that wanted to leave the EU could be dangerous at a miscalculation. I think Nicola Sturgeon as well, she's pretty smart, mate. And she gave this interview the other day saying, I considered calling for a referendum immediately. You know, if there was ever a time, right, that would have been it. And she didn't. And there must be a reason for that.
A lot of smart women in top of politics these days.
Well, it's been coming, wasn't it? I mean, you know, white guys. Yeah, we had a good run at it, but frankly, it's just like, go and have a blow, lads. Just go and have a sit down. Okay, it is fun. No, I mean, it's exciting. You know, I just like good politicians, and it's quite clearly, you know, there's a generation of politicians there, that a lot of whom happen to be female. But, you know, I guess it could be seen as a slightly stereotypical to presume that there'll be a more consensual style of politics. But I think there will be, because of the kind of politicians they are, not necessarily, you know, because Maggie Thatcher and Le Pen wouldn't necessarily jump out as hugely consensual politicians, right, you know, that like a good debate about things. But I just think it so happens that we have a generation of female leaders who are also disposed to open debate, and I'm quite, you know, I'm quite optimistic.
Thank you, Jeff. The show runs until the 28th, is that correct?
The 28th of August is 10 past 7 at the Underbelly Med Quad, and you can get tickets from Ed Fringe. And like I say, you know, I know I'd love as many Conservative voters to come down as well, but if you're a liberal lefty type, my marketing strategy has been a bit like, do you remember that Yorkie, that chocolate bar Yorkie, It's Not for Girls? I've kind of hoped that if you seem to forbid something, that people might come. And it's been brilliant, you know, because those guys, when they join in on the heckle amnesty, it really makes the show. So hopefully as many people as possible will come down.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for being a guest. And good luck for the rest of the Fringe and everything for the future.
Thanks very much, Tim. Cheers, mate.
That's it for today. I really hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please do feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Pohl, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin McLeod.